Hey, so I'm Amy. I'm the host of the Woman in Comedy podcast, and I get to chat with amazing women in the industry, behind the scenes, up on the stage, all about their journey, and a little bit about me. So I work as a programmer for the Woman in Comedy Festival here in Manchester. I also work as a progression booker and look after Beat the Frog for the Frog and Bucket, and work as an artist liaison. Is pretty much me, and I've worked in comedy since 2013. And I started this podcast because I just wanted to talk to amazing women, really, and just have a platform for us to chat and just be ourselves and talk about what it is to be in this amazing, magical, sometimes hard industry. So sit back, grab a brew and a Becky, and enjoy the podcast. Hey Mary, how you doing?
I'm good.
How was your journey? You've come from London today, haven't you?
Yes, I have, yeah.
How was your journey up?
It was fine. I wasn't really paying attention on the train because I think we stopped at Manchester Piccadilly and I was technically going to Victoria, but I was like, well, my B&B is here, so I can just walk. But so I found myself sat on the train and everyone else had gotten up and left, and I was like, I'm sure there's more to my journey. But I couldn't figure out why most of the train had left, and then I was like, okay, we're in Manchester, we're just not at the station that I had originally planned to go to. But I don't want to be left out, so I left as well.
Oh, so you booked in for Manchester Victoria?
Yeah,
but it went okay. Most people go Piccadilly first.
I wasn't paying loads of attention when I was doing the booking either. I don't know if this is coming across, but I tend to lose focus.
Okay. Is that because you just lose focus, or
I think I have ADHD.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I know everyone's getting it these days.
Yeah,
and it's very popular. but I do think I have it. And
yeah.
Sometimes when you're booking gigs, you're just so mindless. Like, you go on train line and you're like, yeah, okay, I can do that. And you don't really think about what is the walk, where can I walk. But, like, they're fairly close together, the stations.
Yeah, it's about a 15-minute walk. Not even that. If you know the quick routes, it's about 10 minutes.
Yeah. So it's sort of like, oh, it doesn't really matter either way.
No. And you're in between with the frog.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
You're in between. You're just going, it's like, well, I can do it in 7 minutes. But you've probably gone the long way, right?
I went the way that Google Maps told me.
Was that through Piccadilly Gardens?
I don't think so.
Okay,
because passing a garden.
Yeah, you'd remember Piccadilly Gardens. It's not a garden.
Well, I came from my hotel because I went to. I checked in there first. It's a lovely twin bedroom. It doesn't have a window.
Oh.
And the internet is patchy at best.
Oh no.
but it's all good.
That's what you have to do, though, isn't it, when you come? Why don't you should check out Theatre Digs on Facebook. It's a theatre website for all artists, and people advertise their rooms on there, or people shout out going, hey, I'm looking for a room, and it's really cheap.
That's cool. I didn't know that that was a thing. But the room, my windowless room was also quite cheap. I just...
That's true.
I couldn't be asked to look longer than 10 minutes for a room. I was like, I need it now. I need to just do the booking, but I will know for next time.
Yeah, yeah. Have you performed in Manchester before? Or is this your first time?
I have performed in Manchester before. I've done it a couple times. I remember quite a few years ago, there was like the Women's International Arts Festival here. And my friend Sophie Duker was doing her show, Wacky Racists. And so she like brought it up to the festival. And so I did a spot in that show.
Mm.
And then my friend Erica Ehler runs a night here called Comedy for Hot People.
Oh, yeah, she used to.
Well, yes, I guess she used to. Like, yeah. And so I did that
before
last
she
year.
Traded us in for the South.
I know, you people must get so annoyed that lots of people like go to London, because I'm from London, so I've never really lived anywhere else apart from uni. So I'm always amazed when I hear of people running really successful comedy nights outside of London, because I'm like, oh god, I've gigged outside of London before.
Yeah.
I've done shows outside of London, and I find it really hard to sell tickets for in a city that I don't live in.
Yeah.
But it's actually easier if you live there, because in London it's so oversaturated. There's so much stuff to do.
Yeah.
Or like there's so much comedy, like it's not all good, but like there's a lot of comedy out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's hard to run a night. But yeah, I've only ever heard good things about my friends who run nights here.
Yeah, yeah, they do really, really well. Like there's like a club like 2 minutes walk from here. Mm. There's nights on at other pubs, you know, bars. What are they called? Can't even speak. Rooms above a pub. There's so many, like, but people don't know that when they come to Manchester. I'm constantly having to go, this is where you can perform. You can double up. Where did you go to uni then?
I went to York.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a long time ago now. And I did English literature.
Yes.
Which was fine.
Okay.
I didn't like, I think I was always fairly good at school, but I didn't necessarily, and I was probably like a bit of a goody two shoes when I was younger, but then I stopped caring about it so much by uni. I was thinking, I was like, oh, well, no one's gonna test me really to see if I've read the book in real life. So I got very good at pretending to have read books.
Really? Did you have to read a lot of books?
We had to read like 2 books a week. Which is crazy. Exactly, yeah.
What?
No, because I'm like, I can't keep up with this. I can't. There's no way.
Nah.
And it was kind of before Audible was a thing. And I didn't have money for Audible. So I think I would sometimes, like, usually with classics, there's like a shitty free version of it, like that's read by a robot.
Yeah.
And like, I have a hard time, like, you know, like I'm not the fastest reader in the world, but what I would do is I would try and find like a terrible audiobook version of it. Put it on like, I don't know, double speed and read along with the book because it just kept me focused. But yeah, it's hard to keep up with that level of work.
Yeah. And there's also the classics. One good thing is there's all those like websites out there that just tells you the gist of the story.
Spark notes every day.
That's it. That's the word I was looking for.
Spark notes, cliff notes all day.
Was it mostly classics that you had to do?
No, it would be a mixture of stuff. So you... what was good about York was it is a really good English degree. Like, I mean, I think it probably still is. Like, I haven't checked.
Mm.
But it was a really good degree. And there were lots of options for modules you could do. So I did, like, a global literature module. And you also, what you had to do is you had to study something in its original language. So you had to do, like, a non-English one. And luckily, I really liked film, so I did actually a couple film modules in my English degree, but the thing I had to do in its original language, I did like post-war Italian cinema, which was where I really got into Italian film, and I had to take evening classes in Italian to do it. And I'm not good at Italian, but the thing when you're watching the films, the subtitles are there, so it didn't matter that much. You can still, you know, when it comes down to you writing your essays, you write the essay in English, which is useful.
That's good. Yeah, I was going to say, could you do comedy in Italian?
Absolutely not. I could give it a go with like Google Translate, but I just don't think that would be fun for anyone involved.
Yeah, that's true. It would be like, because you wouldn't be able to get the nuances of how to joke in the language.
It's a different rhythm of speaking. Like, I think if you want to do jokes in another language, you don't necessarily have to be fluent, but you gotta be able to do more than like order at a restaurant, I think.
Yeah. You'd have to understand their humor, especially some of European countries.
Yeah.
Because they got quite...
Oh, yeah. They're much like very different senses of humor around. Like Germans, none. No sense of humor. I don't know that much about the rest. I did a gig in Amsterdam, not last year, the year before, and there were lots of expats there, but like, and like also people's English is like very good there, so it was it was fine, but it's a much more subdued type of audience energy.
They're like,
than your,
they're just like clapping their hands, smiling, going, oh, that was good, clever, good you. So how did you go from doing English lit film studies to doing stand-up? Were you wanting to be like an author? Or because I know you've done a lot, you've got a lot of writing credits. So you wanting to go that way, or did stand-up just fall into your lap?
No, I always really enjoyed stand-up. Like, I did my first gig when I was 17 as like a school project. Like, I did 5 gigs when I was 17, and then I stopped for ages because like I didn't think that it was like a nice lifestyle. And you know, if myself in my windowless hotel room could talk to my 17-year-old self now, she'd be like, "Well, yeah, this isn't this isn't luxurious."
Yeah.
But I did a lot of comedy at York, like with the Comedy Society.
Oh, cool.
So they have like a pretty good comedy society where they have an improv group. They had like a sketch writing thing, and they had stand-up workshops. So like one part of comedy, like each week there were workshops that were like open to everyone. And then eventually there were shows. I don't know if it was every week, but like maybe it was. Maybe there were shows every week. Yeah, that feels insane to me now. But like in like just like a lecture theater, there'd be these Comedy Sock shows that like no one else came to.
Yeah.
Apart from people within Comedy Sock. But that's where I did a lot of stuff. And it's how I got to go to Edinburgh Fringe Festival for the first time, because the first time I went, I wasn't even doing stand-up, I was in a play.
Oh, really?
I was a student, or like I maybe just finished, and no, I wasn't, I was still a student, and some people in Comedy Sock had written a play, and I auditioned for it, and I got it. I was in one of their plays before that I auditioned for and got, and then they wrote another one. And they were like, "This one we're going to take to the Fringe." And I auditioned again, and I was in it. And it was really fun. It's really fun to do Edinburgh when you're in a play, because you've got some buddies.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the difference between doing your own solo show, stand-up, to doing a play? Because what year were you there for the play?
That was years ago. It was like 2015 or 2016.
Okay,
like,
I was in 2016.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't even doing stand-up, really. Like, I hadn't done stand-up in London since I was, like, 17. Like, I didn't do it. I was really scared of doing it in London, actually. Like, I did it in that lecture hall in York to, like, 5 people occasionally.
So you were doing stand-up 17. Did you do, like, a course, or did you?
No.
So what got you?
I just really liked stand-up. Really? I was really, really into comedy, and my family, we have pretty good like comedy taste. Like, we would watch a lot of sitcoms.
Yeah.
And I was like that time when Countdown shows are really big on TV. So like the 50 Greatest Magic Tricks, or like like the 100 Greatest Stand-Up Comedians. And I remember watching that loads, and looking up the comedians who were on there. So people that would be kind of like niche for me to know, like I kind of found out about them. But both my parents had like really good taste in comedy, but they're not super into stand-up, more like sitcoms and sketch stuff. But I've always really liked stand-up.
Yeah. So where did you perform at 17? Were you like sneaking in? Were you doing the naughty, like lying about...
My first gig was in a bookshop.
Really?
Yeah. It was in a bookshop. They it was called the Big Green Bookshop in Wood Green, RIP. They're not there anymore. I think they have like they might have got another venue now in Turfpoint Lane, but I haven't done it yet. But they had like a monthly comedy night, which they had one open spot. So like everyone else was kind of like on the circuit, but they had one open spot. Because it was kind of like my local bookshop, and I'd always wanted to do stand up, I asked them if I could do it, and they said yes. And I was doing a school project called an EPQ, or an extended project, where basically you do it in between your first and second year of A-levels, so like in that summer between, and you can do it on whatever you want to do. Like, some people wrote essays, some people made films, and I was like, well, I've always wanted to do this, I might as well get some UCAS points for it.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing I got an A-star in.
Wow.
So I did like 5 gigs. I invited like all my friends to the first, to the one in the bookshop. Yeah. And it was, I mean, I overran. I was supposed to do five. I did like 11 minutes. I didn't know, like, I was, I don't even think I had, like, I owned a watch by this point.
Yeah.
I looked like, I remember the footage. I think someone filmed it. And I don't think I have all of it now. But I look so young. Like, I was wearing, like, a little skirt. Like, I don't think I've ever worn a skirt on stage yeah. since. Like, it's not part, like, and like, but, like, by the second gig, and, like, also, I didn't know how to you book gigs or anything.
Yeah.
But by the second gig, I think I did Comedy Virgins
yeah.
In Stockwell. And this is the time before everyone had 3G or Google Maps on their phone. Yeah. And I'm like directionally challenged.
Yeah.
And so I did not know how to get there from the station. Like, I don't know how I got around before I had 3G. And so,
I mean, how did any of us get right? around before maps? Like, crazy. Like, I mean Google Maps. I don't mean actual maps.
But yeah, I remember just like walking around, and I had friends with me for the second one as well. Mm. We were just walking around for ages and ages because this was the point when you had to like sign up for a spot. If you didn't get there by a certain time,
yeah.
then all the signed up spots would be gone. And I was good. I was good like when I first started. Not to be like a dickhead about it, but I remember at the Comedy Virgins thing, they used to do this thing. I don't know if they still, because I don't think I ever did Comedy Virgins again. But there would be like an applause, like a little mini competition. And so I was in like the final round of like the million people who'd been on the lineup that night, because it was a bringer. And there'd be like 20 acts a night. But yeah, I by this point I was like no more skirts. I had like a yellow blazer on and trousers. I was like, I was really kind of like feeling my like 80s, 80s. What's the deal with airplane food? Kind of like comedian vibe. And I think like, because this is the thing, like I did those five gigs and then I didn't do stand up again for like ages in London because I think I was a bit scared of it. I think I've been a bit scared off. I had one gig where it just wasn't that fun. Mm. And I was a child, like I was 17.
Yeah.
I had exams and I also wasn't technically allowed in the places I was gigging. So I stopped and I did tiny bits and bobs at uni, but I don't really, it's not really the same.
Yeah.
And I never figured out, I still don't really know how to book gigs, like on the set. I know how to book gigs, but there would be, I just hated how so much of it was on Facebook and it changes, like it's changed so much since the pandemic because so many nights have started up, so many nights have gone and I just can't keep up with the systems of it.
Yeah.
So I didn't really properly start gigging again until 2019, I guess.
Really?
But even then it was like, I don't think I got into like a good rhythm of it until maybe right before the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Were you kind of like thinking of, because you said you were doing a play, did you think about the acting route? Because I know a lot of stand-ups, female comics did acting first, and then they were told they weren't serious and so they found stand-up. Were you wanting to go down that route when you did Edinburgh or?
Not really. I still don't really know if I can act.
Okay.
I knew that I could perform in front of an audience and I would like to act more now.
Yeah.
Now that I've sort of seen the industry and I know that having a stand-up career is great, but a lot of the time being like a successful comedian means having your own show or like acting in other shows and stuff like that. And so I've been looking at more acting work in recent years. But at the time it was just uni, it was just a bit of fun. I didn't take it that seriously. Because sometimes when I look back on my life with regret, I think I'm like, oh, maybe I should have gone to drama school. Like, maybe I'm like really missing out because I like, because I want to, because I'm a performer and I never really studied performing in any way. Maybe I should have gone to drama school. And I said this to a friend of mine and she said, Mary, I don't think you could have gone to drama school. Like, you wouldn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
You'd walk in and they'd be like, okay, pretend to be a colour and you'd be done.
Yeah. Because I think the joy of stand-up is that you can create it all yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you're in control of about 90% of it.
Yeah.
Until you're on a stage and then it's 50-50. You know what I mean? So I think you probably have done the right thing by going the comedy route. So when did you go, right, I'm going to get back up on that stage? Do you know? Or
I don't know. I don't know if there was a particular, like, breakthrough moment or whatever. I think I really struggled working full time and trying to gig in the evenings. I think that is a really hard balance.
Yeah.
And I did a master's in film studies in London and I didn't gig during that time. But then I got my first job at a factual TV production company. And it was like the hours were really long. Like it would be like 8 to 5 p.m. And we were doing the work because there were two of us there. And we didn't even get like separate email addresses. We were like, it was just the runner email address. And it felt a little disheartening. And we were doing the work of like the two of us doing the work of, I would say, four people now. Yeah. Really. Like, it was really, really full on. And I didn't want to work in factual TV, but I really tried hard to get a job. It was just the first job that I got.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to take it. I need to to take this job. And I knew that a foot in the door at a production company would lead to other stuff.
So what did you want to do when you did your master's? Were you wanting to do, like, what area did you want to move into?
When I actually decided to do the MA, I wanted to be a film historian.
Cool.
I thought that would be the route I would go down because when you're at uni, you still kind of could fool yourself into thinking you're an academic.
Yeah.
But I'm not an academic. Like, I'm not. And I like film, I'm passionate about it. And so I was looking, you know, just like late night looking up what you need to become a film historian. And it said a master's in film studies. And I always really enjoyed my film modules in my literature degree way more than the actual book stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I've been missing out by not doing film. So I should do an MA in film studies. And it was the first year that student finance would do the loan for an MA.
Oh yeah.
Because otherwise I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have been able to do
it. An MA is so expensive.
Yeah.
It's the price of a car, if not more. Yeah.
And so I did my MA and I worked part time in Claire's Accessories.
Yeah. We've all been there, done the retail.
But yeah, when I got my first production company job, I found it hard with the balance. I could have done like two gigs that year, like nothing. I didn't really feel like I was exercising the muscles. I didn't feel like I was gigging. And I still found the scene a little bit exclusionary. Exclusive? Like it was still kind of like, oh, a woman on the lineup. That, like, you know, like, it's so backwards. Comedy is so backwards.
Yeah, it is.
And like, particularly like, oh, woman of color on the lineup. Like, it was just, it didn't seem like the most welcoming space. And it took me quite a few years to actually find community within comedy. And so it took me a while to make it look like an appealing thing for me. Because I love performing, I love doing stand-up, but you have to acknowledge the work environment you're in can sometimes be hostile. So I was scared off quite a lot. And I was young, like, you know, I didn't have like as thick a skin as I do now. So my journey has been very slow, I would say.
Yeah, but I think also too, the older you are, the better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes the industry can take advantage of younger people, mm-hmm. and they can be a bit like doe-eyed and like, oh, this is all magical. But yet you don't realize that you're getting kind of, as horrible as this sounds, like chewed up and then spat out.
Yeah.
As soon as they've used you, you're gone. But when you're older, you've got a bit more gravitas to you to be like, no, you can't treat me like that. No, the fuck? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So I think probably the universe, well, however you want to say it, you know, like being older and then, and obviously having your Edinburgh experience as well, because I remember seeing your show in 2022.
Yeah.
So how did you feel? Because obviously that was a whip and then you came back.
Yes.
Was that your, what's the word? Preview year? Like, no.
Debut.
Yeah. That's the word I was talking about. So you debuted last year.
Yes, I did, yeah.
How did that go for you?
It was good. Like, it's really, Edinburgh's such an intense month. It's hard to, when I was there, I was like, oh, we do this for this month. And then it's kind of weird thinking about the rest of the year, the rest of the 11 months not being like that. Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, I've just decided to kind of contort what my well-being and mental health like into, like, just like into a burning ball of entertainment for a month.
Yeah.
But I had a really good run. So it was my debut. The show was called Money Princess, yeah. And it's about my relationship with money, having money anxiety, my relationship with capitalism and being a workaholic, even though I think work is stupid. And the complexities of being a performer when my identity is such a big factor of what the audience see and what bookers see, when I'd like to be able to, you know, I sort of have a bit in the show where I talk about like white being the norm and like people don't have to sort of like explain, white people don't have to explain why they're there or why they're white or whatever, because 100%. It's just taken as a given. But there's this level of like you're starting off a few steps behind. And so it's like, oh, explain yourself. Why are you here?
Yeah.
And I find that annoying. I don't know when that will ever change. It's kind of always going to be a thing, and it's okay, but it is something that you think about as a performer when people, like, especially the first few seconds where people just try to sum you up.
Yeah.
And so much of stand up and just being a comedian is about people's perceptions of you.
Yeah.
And when someone's perception of you is more loaded, when you don't start at zero, you'll have a harder time. Like, it will just be harder and you have to work harder. And so there's a part of that in the show, but it is mostly just like a fun, silly show where I come out like with money guns.
Yes, so that was great. Do you know what? I didn't get to see it I can't even speak. I'm dyslexic, so do apologize. But like as a fully formed show, I got to see it as a whip. And even then I was like, this has got really good legs.
Oh, thank you. Like,
it's really good.
It changed a lot from the whip stage, because I guess something really big happened in my life in between doing the whip and doing my debut, because I'd already decided the whip was called something like There's Something Wrong with Mary. And in that, it's talk about like the absurdity of the workplace. I talk about why I'm never going to get married. And it was just me having fun on stage because I could. And it was a whip and I really, really enjoyed performing in that room. And what I figured out I wanted to be the main theme of my debut show was money, because it's something I think about every single day. And then this is like November 2022, I've decided on the title Money Princess. I'm going to start doing whips of that as a show. And I entered this OnlyFans comedy competition thing.
So people know that OnlyFans decided that they were going to jump into the comedy bandwagon, which shocked us all in the industry. We're like, you're going to do what now? Which is exciting for you.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It was so odd. So in the application, because loads of people were talking about it on the circuit, but in the application it said, it didn't say anything about it being a reality TV show, which it was. It didn't say that in the application. I thought it was just like a stand-up show that they might stream on the platform or something like that. But even like, but the craziest thing was that the prize money was £50,000. And I was like, yeah, of course I'll enter. And I sort of forgot about it. I entered maybe in like September. And then in November I'm at work and basically I get a call from the producers and they want me in the show, but I have to decide that day because I have to check into the hotel that night.
And was it filmed in London?
Yes, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was filmed in London. Like, it was actually, like, not that far away from where I live. So I didn't necessarily need to check into the hotel that night. But, like, you know, those things, they've got to control the moving parts.
Yes, they do.
But I had a whip scheduled for the following day. That was quite an important one. Like, a few industry were going to come watch that one and different promoters and producers to see who was going to, like, produce my Edinburgh show. And I was like, I actually have to cancel this whip because I'm doing an OnlyFans comedy competition. And so I did it and it was the most stressful week of my entire life. Like, it was really stressful. Like, if you want to hear more about it, like, I talk about it in the show.
Yeah.
But I will, I feel like people, like, some people know enough now. I can talk about it because it aired in, like, early 2023. But essentially, the day before the final, they doubled the money. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And the day before that, one of the challenges was so awful. Like, I was crying all the time. I wanted to leave. Like, I really wanted to leave.
Hang on, take a step back. So what kind of challenges did you have to do? Like, I assumed it was all just a normal stand-up show. Like, like the Beat the Frogs and the... I just thought it was going to be like
normal,
you know, like the British Comedian of the Year.
No, it was a 6-day shoot. So we were there like for 6 days and basically people, if they got eliminated, they had to leave. And so you're sort of in this hotel room like indefinitely.
Oh my God.
And the first challenge, we had to do like a 30-second viral in air quotes video. And we only had like an hour to do it. Like, the first hour we're doing it. And then there was always like a twist every challenge. So the twist for that one was that we had to like put some Cockney rhyming slang in the video because that's what Americans think British people are like, I guess. And the most, like, the first couple of days I was like, this is bizarre. This is insane. And so I was taking it seriously, but I was also like, this is the weirdest thing ever. Like, as a show, this is so strange. The second challenge was actually quite a cool activity. So we got partnered up with people and they had to write like 2-3 minutes of material for us, like for me, and I had to write material for them. And then we would perform the material that had been written for us.
Oh, wow.
So it was like an exercise in like getting to know your partner and stuff. But again, like 2 hours, like not a lot of time to like write. And then
it just sounds like Drag Race.
It was really like, that's how it was sort of described to me. But I was just really stressed. Like, I wasn't sleeping in the hotel. Like, I couldn't sleep. I was so anxious. And I can't say that I like enjoyed the experience as a whole. Like, I'm very, very glad that I did it. So the third challenge, I might as well say it's in the, I talk about it in the show. I talk about it better in the show. But the third challenge, so two people were eliminated each round. Yeah. So by the third challenge, there's 6 of us left. And we're doing a stand-up gig. Like, we hadn't even done a proper stand-up gig yet. And so they're like, are you going to do a gig? Are you excited? We're like, yeah, we're so excited. And it was at Backyard. But we weren't allowed to watch each other perform. And I was like, I haven't even seen, like, because I don't really know most of the people in the competition. So I was like, I haven't even seen them do stand-up. I don't know what I'm up against. And also, like, I've bonded with these people now. Like, I want to see them do their thing. But we weren't allowed to watch each other. We're kept in a car outside of the venue.
Oh, my God.
I go on last. I get up on stage. No one's introduced me. I get up and it's an audience full of pensioners at a buffet.
Oh, no.
Who've been paid to heckle. So I was just like, oh, my God. This is like, they are really like pranking us. They are really putting us through it. And I was really like furious by then. I was really angry that they would do something like that, because it just made me feel icky. Like it just like, it made me feel a bit like, I know it probably make good TV, but I was just sort of like, this isn't that, like, I was like, we're performers. We're like, we're like creative people. Like we've come on to do, I guess maybe, I don't know if I'm like being too sensitive about it, but I was really like, it really rocked me. I was like, oh, okay. Like, you don't respect us as people. You just kind of like want to, oh God, I hope OnlyFans don't listen to this. Still, I love you, OnlyFans.
I mean, there's probably like, you know, we don't have a big following, so don't worry. It's mostly female comedians listening to this, so do not worry.
But yeah, and that, I was really, and I died. Like, I had one joke, like I did one joke where I was like, did we all have a good pandemic? I think some of you guys still lucky to be here.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's, and they laughed at that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought of it on the spot. I was like, okay, I've got to do something. Yeah. Like, and they clapped at that, but then because they did not like the rest of my material.
But if they've been paid not to like it, then...
I mean, I think they sort of like, we were still kind of supposed to win them over. That was like, that was the challenge. Yeah. And I just didn't do very well. Oh my God,
so if any comic moans to you about a gong show, you'll be like, I can trust you.
Well, I wasn't even sure. And they told us to do a set about sex and or relationships. So I'm doing like 5 minutes on like porn to these old people. And I wasn't sure whether to just change it in the moment and just be like, okay, think on your feet, do something different, or whether, like, how serious the competition rules were about just still sticking to my guns and doing my porn material, which was not quite right for that crowd.
But you made it through, though, didn't
you? I made it through because I won it.
That's right. I was going to be like, spoiler alert.
I won.
Congratulations, though. Like, that's an amazing achievement to get through all that.
It did feel really, really good, because like the final was just a regular stand-up gig. I'm like, okay, I know how to do this. Cool. And again, there were six of us, because they didn't eliminate anyone in the pensioner challenge, because I think they were worried we would sue.
Yeah.
And the final was judged by Jamali Maddox, London Hughes, and Mae Martin. And so,
yes, that's right. Yeah.
So to be recognized by those people, like, really was this amazing feeling. And I won it. And I was just sort of like, I've had the most insane week of my life. I have not slept in 6 days. I have won a life-changing amount of money.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know how to process it. And I was like, my Edinburgh show is called Money Princess. It was called that before.
Yeah.
I have to talk about this in the show now.
Yeah, of course.
And I've sort of, my relationship to money has changed and also not changed overnight, because I'm like, well, yeah, I have a lot more money than I did before, but my money anxiety is worse.
Yes.
My relationship to money is worse, because I did this crazy thing that is kind of like an anomaly.
Yeah.
But it was the most amount of money I've ever made in my entire life.
Yeah, because they also say, don't they, people who win lotto, like, it just, they all say it blows up their life to a degree. I mean, that's an insane amount of money we're talking about. I mean, I don't think I'd be able to comprehend that amount of money.
Yeah, it's weird, like, because it's not a lottery. It's not a lottery winning, but it is crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't think I necessarily, like, I think I'm still processing it. I know it's been, like, a long time now, but I mean, the show was like, it aired in like 2023, and I had to like keep it a secret, like, that I'd won until like the final episode. And it's still, because I don't think they did a very good like job like publicizing the show and stuff, to most people, it's still like a surprise when I tell, like, when I have a lot of people who saw the show were like, oh my God, you won. Like,
yeah. Do you think it was then just targeted at an American audience?
I did, like, when, because after I won, I did a little bit of, I guess, I don't know, like, if it was like proper PR for them, but like, they had me be interviewed by like a few American journalists and podcasters. Mm. And so I think they maybe just didn't publicize it loads here.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it was still like, it's still like this amazing, fun surprise twist, I guess, in my show.
Yeah.
Which is fun. But it also is like, oh, this is not, no one knows about this. I've just got 100K and no one knows.
Do you know what? It sounds like a reality show from my country, like New Zealand. Like, if I told you about a reality show, you'd be like, what? No one knows about it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I just remember it all coming out and they did kind of advertise it. Like, all the articles talked about it being like just a, because the judges, we knew who the judges were, and then it just, the way they talked about it was just a lineup show.
Yeah, no, it is. It was a challenge show.
Yeah. Jeez, that's crazy. So how did your Edinburgh show go? Because I didn't go to Edinburgh that year.
It was good. It was really good. I was in a really lovely venue at the Pleasance.
That's gonna say.
And it just felt like, I'm very proud of the show. Like, because I've never done that before. I've never done like an hour where I'm like, no, this is serious. I'm working with a director. I'm making sure that I'm doing previews and I'm rewriting it and I'm like thinking about structure.
Yeah.
And what is amazing about the OnlyFans thing is that, yeah, obviously, like, I put it into the show. It became a big part of the show.
Yeah.
But it was a great way to be telling a story throughout the whole show. And I think that it needed to happen to have the show be as good as it was.
Yeah.
And even if I hadn't won, I think the experience of doing the show would definitely have been in my debut, because I was doing something insane for money.
Yeah. yeah. And what was it like? Because it's quite interesting to talk about the difference between doing Free Fringe, because your whip was Free Fringe.
Yes.
And were you Laughing Horse or were you
I was PBJ.
PBJ.
PBH. Sorry. PBH. No. Yes. Sorry, I always get them confused. Sorry, yeah. No, PBH.
PBH, yeah. I had to think about that for a second. And then doing the Pleasance, which is a bit, for people who don't know, Pleasance is like a big organization at the Fringe. Like, there's four big ones: Gilded, Underbelly, Assembly, and Pleasance. So how was that process? Because Free Fringe, it's all on you.
Yeah, Free Fringe is, I mean, luckily for me, like, when I did the Free, because I always flyed my own shows up until like 2022. And I had some flyers for my Free Fringe show. And then doing an hour is on the paid Fringe is totally different, because you can, some people sell out before August. And you're like, it's like the Oscar campaign. Like, you're like campaigning through the year to be like, come look at me. Like, this is my big sparkly debut. And so quite a lot of the time, and just knowing that you're selling out is a really exciting feeling. Like, I never known that before. Like, whenever I did my Free show, I was like, oh, there's people here. This is great.
Yeah.
But then when you're doing a show and you get reviewed, and which I sort of like, which I was really anxious about at the beginning, but then you sort of, you get your first one and it's like, okay, all right, fine. And you know, you might work with a production company, might not. And you can let them know, be like, okay, I only really want to see the good reviews. Don't show me the bad ones, because that's not helpful for my mental state.
Yeah.
But luckily, I didn't get any, like, terrible reviews.
Yeah.
And so when I got my first 4-star review, I was like, oh, this is amazing. But then, like, pretty soon afterwards, I'm like, I want another one. I want another 4-star review.
And what's crazy about Edinburgh is then suddenly every poster, everywhere has stars all over their posters.
And I was like, I want my poster to be covered in stars.
But we'll say this, a free fringe is great because you are in control.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about paying massive fees, but you do have to work really hard and have a good bucket speech.
Definitely. Like, I think the free fringe is such a great way to do the fringe when you're up and coming, when you want a little bit of like a low stakes fringe. Like, because I've done quite a few fringes like as a student, like when I didn't really know what being successful in Edinburgh meant. I just knew that if I got like £10 in the bucket, like if we split it up and I still got like a tenner, I was like, this is great. And so I've had such an amazing time in 2022 doing my WIP because it was just me connecting with people. There weren't like, it wasn't like people had seen a review or anything. It was, you just had to prove it to them then and there. And people sometimes, they might think, oh, like I go to a free show, and they might just assume it's less valuable than a paid show. But really, you're just proving its value with the show.
Yeah. And also you can find some really great gems in the free fringe.
Absolutely, yeah.
I found some. There was one great act, I can't remember their name, but it was in the City Cafe.
Mm.
And we were in a room this size, which was very small. Oh, yeah,
City
small.
Cafe has some very small
rooms. So we're in like a karaoke room. So
I know.
And we were 30 of us squished in there. But they were great. They were amazing. Yeah. Because
you have to sort of do a lot with the space that you're given. And sometimes there isn't a door, there's a curtain. Yeah. And it's just, there's something like very pure about it.
Mm.
Just singing for your supper, I guess.
I think it really builds you as an artist.
Definitely,
prepare you for what it's going to be like when you go with those big companies. How hard you've got to work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because you still, even when you do paid fringe, like sometimes the venues aren't like that nice. Like all fringe venues are a little bit dingy.
Yes.
In a way. Like,
and none aircon.
No aircon. No aircon. And they all, like, my room was very hot by the end of the month. Like, I think we had, like, we got a fan. Mm. But you're working a little bit against your environment because you're doing comedy in a space where it doesn't have comedy all year round.
Yeah. I worked for Gilded Balloon, and our venue at that time, they don't use that venue anymore, was Counting House. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So we had one like 120 seat, and then we had a 50 and two 30s.
Yeah.
And those attics were so hot.
They get really fucking hot.
Yeah. They were just insane. But there was like 50 shows a day that we were,
oh my God.
That we were going in and out. We worked like a machine.
You have like, it's really, everyone is running on adrenaline.
Yeah.
That month. Like everyone is. I still don't even know how I did it, how everyone does it.
Yeah. How to even put that brochure together. Like for the Woman in Comedy Festival, we have 60 shows and that feels like a lot.
Yeah.
And we do all the work for that. Do you know what I mean? Like we do, we run around like crazy people. I got COVID last year, which was so sad.
No.
Yeah. So I didn't get to see all the shows. I didn't get to work them all, which is a shame. But I was like, I'd rather me have COVID than the ex.
Sure, yeah.
And everyone go down. Because that's hard. But yeah, but you're performing tonight, though.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, doing a nice trial for us on a Thursday.
Yes. Because I've never performed it before. So I'm trying to gig more outside of London, because I do a fair bit, but not, I don't necessarily have a rhythm of that yet, because up until very recently I was still working full time.
Yeah.
Even though I won this money, I still kept my job for like
a
year
smart.
Afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wanted to do my debut and see how I felt about how that went, and see if I wanted to try and pursue comedy full time for a while.
Yeah.
And so I had a good debut. So I was like, okay, let's carry on.
yeah. And it's good to gig outside of London.
Yeah.
I think it builds you as a comic.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to do Edinburgh this year?
No.
You're going to have a year off?
I want to have a year off.
That's wise.
I might go up and visit.
Yeah, jump on the lineups.
Yeah.
Did you do that when you were in Edinburgh? Did you do all the lineup shows?
I did a few. I did a few spots. I think I didn't do as many as when I was doing the Whip because it was just a little bit more draining doing an hour.
Yeah.
But I did. I had the pleasure of doing the Dark Room. So it's like this. I don't actually see the full thing because I think I was coming from another spot when I did it. But it's like choose your own adventure style game.
And, oh, yeah. We have it here 4 times a year.
Oh, really?
Mm, yeah, he does it here, yeah.
Well, I was like the cameo in that in that show. And at the end, I had to crowd surf to someone and I was like, oh my God, like I've never crowd surfed before. And so that was because I was like, I had no idea that was going to happen tonight. I didn't have to do any material, but I had to crowd surf.
Well, I can imagine in that show.
And it was, they were on like a sort of, it wasn't like a flat thing. The audience was on, they were like on, I don't know what you call it, like staggered, like seating. So I was like, how am I going to crowd surf up
stadium
this? Stadium seating. Like, but they did it. they did it at a great time.
They're up for anything, those audiences.
Yeah.
Well, I can hear the music of the show. It's about to begin.
Better get ready.
Yeah, I should probably leave. But thank you so much
for having a chat with me.
It was great.